This is Upreneur FM, the official podcast of the Upreneur Mastermind Community, a place where no entrepreneur gets left behind in their pursuit of building a business they can be proud of.
And now,
here's your host, serial entrepreneur and best-selling author, Chris Ducker.
Hello, hello, and welcome to episode number 188 of Upreneur FM, the place to be if you are a personal brand entrepreneur wanting to build a long game, successful business around you, your brand, your purpose, and everything that you stand for. Today is our last rerun episode. And if you're just tuning in for the first time, you don't know what that means. It means that every week this month of October, I have been delving into the Upreneur FM archives and pulling out a gem that you might not have usually discovered. And today, I bring on my very good friend, my best friend, quite frankly, Pat Flynn, from all the way from episode number 3. Yes, we go way back into the archives, 185 episodes back. Before I do that, however, I would love to just remind you one quick time for the month of October that you can go ahead and grab a free copy of my new ebook called The Personal Branding Roadmap. You can head over to upreneur.com/ebook to get that right now. It's free. And basically, it will just walk you through exactly what you need to do in a 10-step process to be able to build a personal brand from scratch. Or if you've already got a personal brand up and running, we'll breathe some much-needed new fresh air and life into that brand. So head over to upreneur.com/ebook and make sure you pick up your copy right now today. Again, it's free. You've got nothing to lose. Just head over there and check it out. So on to my chat with Pat. Now, for most people, he won't need any major introduction. He's been on the show a number of times. Like I said, we're good friends. Everybody talks about our bromance. But the fact is that we do get on very, very well because we're very aligned in the way that we think about our families first and foremost. Our business philosophies are quite similar, with long game in mind and serving people the right way, etc., etc. And, you know, Pat really is the perfect example of a great personal brand. He's got a successful blog, podcasts, yes, plural. There's a couple of them. I've even done one myself with him called the One Day Business Breakthrough Podcast. And, you know, YouTube channel, successful keynote speaker, you name it. He's everywhere. And that is exactly what we talked about in episode 3 of the podcast when I started it all the way back in 2012. And the message is still very clear today in 2016. Yes, we're going 4 years back into the archive to finish off our rerun month, and with very good reason. The message is clear. We still have to be everywhere. We still have to focus on our own hub online. We still have to make sure that we're focusing on the right things for the right reasons. And we still have to make sure that whatever we're doing is with quality in mind and with the overall goal being helping people, plain and simple. So here's my chat with Pat. Enjoy it. And just a little cliff note here, this is the last time you're going to get to hear that old school new business podcast outro music. So enjoy it right at the end of the episode. I'll be back at you again next Friday with a brand new fresh episode of the show. Till then, here's Pat.
Hey, what's up? Thanks for having me.
What's up? So, hey, that was one of the best commercial campaigns of all time. Can we just say that?
Yeah, man.
Love it. All right. So now you'll hear me and Pat talk here over the next 30, 40 minutes or whatever it is. We're good friends on and offline, and very comfortable with each other. So if it starts to get a little bit silly, you understand that's the reason why. Am I right, bro?
Yeah, I mean, we may have to edit stuff out. That's how silly it could be.
It could be ridiculous. It could get really stupid. Okay, so I invited Pat on the show. Usually at this point, I would normally say, you know, for anyone who hasn't heard of you, why don't you tell them a little bit about yourself? But that's ridiculous in this particular case because you are one of the most popular bloggers on the planet right now. SmartPassiveIncome.com has become one of the go-to blogs when it comes to the whole kind of make money online, internet entrepreneurship, all that sort of stuff rolled into one. So I'm going to forego that and just assume that everyone on the planet Earth knows who you are. Is that a good enough assumption?
I doubt that's the case. I mean, mean, that's awesome for you to say that, but I know there are people out there who haven't heard of me, and that's fine. But, you know, I'm always trying to reach as many people as possible, and I have a lot of specific ways that I do that, which I know we're going to get into today.
That's what I wanted to talk about. What a great lead-in. It's like you do this for a living. Have you ever done a podcast before?
I have. I just published episode 50 the other day. That was my goal for 2012, and I hit it. So,
you hit it.
So right now it's at 2.35 million downloads after 50 episodes.
See, I told you that there was a lot of people that knew about Pat, everyone. So for those of you out there who haven't heard of him, head over to smartpassiveincome.com, find out a little bit more. But today we are going to talk about your philosophy for online business, which has now become somewhat a little bit of a movement. I see it being quoted and mentioned by tons and tons of people all around the internet space. And, you know, this is something that I feel that can and should be taken away from online business and also focused offline as well, because there's a lot of different ways that you can skin the business cat, as they say. And we're going to talk today about being everywhere. So tell us about the concept, where it come about, and or where it came about, rather. Good God, you wouldn't believe I'm English after that. So when did it came about, and or how did it come about? And then we're going to, I guess, sort of break down some of the individual topics and take a closer look at them in regards to new business, new media, and that sort of type of thing. Give us the 411. What's the deal, Pat?
Sure. I mean, the whole be everywhere strategy, it has a lot of moving parts, and it doesn't happen overnight. And it's something that you kind of work toward one piece at a time. But if you get everything working together, I mean, oh, man, it could just perpetually levitate your business and grow your business without you even having to put in that much work, because you've already put in that work. I mean, that's kind of what I talk about on my blog, things you could do now so you can reap the benefits later. And I don't just talk about money, as far as doing stuff now so you can earn more money later. It's doing stuff now so you can become more authoritative, so that you can you get more traffic and build a reputation online almost automatically, because, again, you put in all that work. Now, the whole, you know, I'll tell you about the strategy in a second, but this came about because, you know, my blog, Smart Passive Income, started in late 2008, and not very many people were on it. You know, whenever you start a blog, it's just there, and no one else knows about it but you when you start it out. You know, when you start a blog or a website or any sort of business, you know, it's like I compare it to putting a message into a bottle and then throwing it into the ocean. You know, when you do that, when you, like, you write a note and you hope somebody finds it. That's exactly what starting a website is like. You just throw it in the ocean, the tide of the internets, and hope that the tide takes it to where people are. And, sometimes, you know, more often than not, people will eventually find it through Google search naturally, or somebody with some influence will pick it up and then share it with their friends and followers. And the tide will have taken it somewhere that'll benefit you. But the whole point about the Be Everywhere strategy is, don't just throw your message in the ocean and just hope. You got to place your message where people are already looking for brands or websites or information that you already have. And so this came about actually without even – I sort of built this strategy without even knowing it. It sort of just happened because I felt that this was the natural progression of my blog and where it should go. It's how exactly I thought I should expand, and it turned into the strategy that just – I sort of looked at it and was like, oh, this is what I did. Other people should do this too. And so what happened was in, 2009, maybe a year after I started my blog, I was getting okay traffic. You know, I was writing good articles about businesses that I've created already, and those were gaining a little bit of traction. But after about a year, you know, that honeymoon phase with the blog is over, or website or business is over, and it just – you get the same amount of traffic every day, the same people commenting, and you just lose that sort of – fervor or that energy that you had when you first started. And so I was looking for ways to kind of expand my audience. You know, I was already pumping great content out, I thought. So I said, okay, well, what else can I do? So then I started a YouTube channel. I figured, okay, well, YouTube is a potential place that I can get some new eyes on my brand. It's another medium that I can explore. And I was deathly afraid of it too. That was the thing. I was, if you go back to some of my first videos, I just can't listen to them. I just cannot listen to them because the quality of my voice, and I'm just so slow, right. And I lack all this confidence. But you know what? I did it. And over time, the videos just started to You know, I just started to churn out the videos. Views started coming in. And, you know, now 3 years later, after creating that video channel on YouTube, I have almost 2 million views of my videos. But then, you know, I wanted more, you know, so, you know, after about a year after the YouTube channel went up, I wanted more. And I said, okay, what else can I do beyond just writing on my blog and also creating videos? And then I figured, hey, what about a podcast? And I always knew that a podcast, like what you're listening to right now, was always a great way to reach people. I mean, you're listening to it right now. It is what inspired me to start business online. I was listening to these guys, Jeremy and Jason from Internet Business Mastery, when I was still working 9 to 5. I listened to them every single day, and they inspired me. And they, you know, that's how I knew that a podcast was a great way to really reach people. And there was something about the voice.
There is.
You know, I know you can get the voice in video too, but when someone is driving in their car or at the gym or walking their dog or whatever, and they plug you in into their ears, and that, you know, that's all they're listening to is you and your voice. It's like you're sort of hypnotizing them almost. I mean, they've chose to listen to you for X number of minutes, and there's no quick little X button that they can click out of. I mean, they've subscribed to your content and they're listening to you. I mean, there's nothing more powerful than the voice, and you can get sort of these little nuances with your voice that you can't get with content written on your blog, such as, you know, dynamics or, you know, expressions and emotions and stuff, which is really how we connect with people. I mean, written content is great. You know, it's what Google loves and what search engine optimization is about. But when it comes down to connecting with people, it's the voice and those expressions and the little things.
Yeah, and I mean, like, you know, this is business 101. I mean, what have we been doing for the last, I don't know, whatever, 50, 60 odd years, consistently, minute after minute, day after day, hour after hour, we have been talking on the telephone. And this is what I say to people nowadays. If you want to make a difference in your business today, pick up the damn phone, make a cold call, pick up and speak with a client that you haven't seen for the last 6-8 months or whatever, because we rely so much on the online world, and that's great. And it certainly has absolutely revolutionized the way that we do business today. But it's the old school way of doing business. And I guess this is where my age and the fact that I have no hair and I'm getting old and I'm a little bit more traditional behind me in the way that I do business. I'm not sort of one of those hardcore online guys, right? So it's, for me, I kind of like to try and have that bit of a balance for both. And I always say, if there is any kind of issue, if there's a point that you want to get across above and beyond anything else, something that's important, pick up the phone. Let them hear your voice, because your voice, you know, you can, like you say, you can use emotions, you can pause, you can lower your voice, you can make it louder, you can do all these different things on the phone, just like we do in podcasting, that you can't do via email or blog posts, maybe a little bit via video, but not I don't think as directly as physically injecting yourself into someone's, you know, ear. So I'm a big believer of the power of voice and what it can do for business as well. And I know for yourself, producing that podcast after the blog and the video channel, producing that podcast really helped you catapult your brand and the growth of your brand within that sort of first 12 months or so. Tell us a little bit about some of the success that you had off of the back of getting going with the podcast. Because you had that tab, right? You had the tab in your menu for a while saying, I'll be starting a podcast soon. But it took you forever to actually pull the trigger, right?
It took me forever because, one, it wasn't just a push button. Hey, I'm going to start a podcast. I can do it right now. There's some technical stuff that goes along with it that scared me. And I was just scared of producing it and wondering what people were going to think of my voice and, you know, what if it sucked and things like that. So I actually said I was going to do a podcast in December of 2009. Right. But my first episode went up in July of 2011. So a year and a half later.
Wow, I knew it was long. I didn't know it was that long though. So
yeah, it was a long time. It was embarrassingly long.
You launch it, and I do remember it very well. By then, we were very good friends after meeting each other. I think online late 2009 initially, but then we hooked up for the first time face to face at the that's right, at Blogworld in Vegas, right? So
yeah,
obviously by then, you know, we become buddies, we help each other, we support each other and all that sort of stuff. So I knew when it was coming around and when it was, you know, about to go live and everything. What do you think was, like, number one, what do you think was the hardest part of getting started? And number two, what was the best thing about getting started with a podcast? So the hardest thing that stopped you from doing it for so long, and then the best thing that you got out of it once you actually started.
Well, I think the hardest thing, like I said earlier, was the techie part of it, you know,
right.
to set up the RSS feeds and all that stuff. That stuff just confused me. And whenever I'm confused, I'm just like, okay, I'm going to go back to doing what I'm used to doing. And that's everybody, right? And so it was finally when I got some information from other podcasters talking about how much success they were having that I was like, okay, I'm just going to work through this. I'm just going to ask people who have done it and just figure it out. I'm not going to stop until I do it. And then I did it. And then amazing things happened. I mean, some of the small things happened. I'll go over some of the small things and then the big one. Over time, I've just become a lot more confident in how I communicate. I've become a better speaker behind the microphone. I've built up enough courage to do public speaking live in person. I've since done, you know, I've done 5 live presentations. I'm doing 4 more next year, already planned, plus more. And it's just, even in my relationships at home with my family, you know, I've become a better communicator, all because I've learned how to communicate behind the microphone and with a lot of people who are listening in the audience. The biggest thing actually came about when I actually learned about this strategy. It was 2011 Los Angeles Blog World Expo. I was asked to do a public speaking presentation there, and I was looking to do a topic, and the topic was really easy for me to decide on because everyone at that point was like, I was getting emails every day, Pat, you're everywhere. That's where this kind of turn came from. Like, people were saying, Pat, I see you here. I see you here. You're doing this. You're everywhere. How do you do it? Everyone was just saying, you must be the guy to go to because I see you wherever I go.
Right.
And so I was like, okay, I have to write about this. And I was like, really? I knew that I was sort of doing a lot of things, but I didn't know that it was having that kind of effect on my brand. So it was having a very authoritative effect. But quantitatively, when I did a survey on my blog in preparation for this particular presentation, I did a survey on my blog, just my blog, not my podcast, not my video audience, just my blog. I asked them, how did you first find out about me? How did you first find out about Smart Passive Income or Pat Flynn? And now you're reading my blog. The number one way that people found out about me was through my podcast. Through
Huge.
My podcast.
Huge.
I believe it was 19% of my audience on my blog had first heard about me through my podcast on iTunes.
Yeah.
Or from someone's talking about my podcast. So
that's a huge percentage, no matter what way you want to kind of cookie cutter that. It's a huge percentage. I mean, if I gave you $1 million and then took 19% of that back, you'd feel it. You know what I'm saying? It's a big number. And I remember sitting in LA with you, and we were going, you know, we were looking through the presentation, and when that number popped up on the screen, I was like, damn, that's a lot of people. I mean, it was, and it wasn't like you just had like 20 people like reply to the survey, right? You had like 2,000 or something reply to the survey.
Now it's because people have got still see that survey on that particular blog post that I
right.
wrote that on. I think it's up over 6,000 respondents.
Wow.
And it's overwhelmingly still,
it's the podcast is still the same.
Yep, about 19 to 20%. So 1 out of every 5 people find me through iTunes or my podcast.
So this is exactly what we're doing here. We're talking about the different ways to be able to be found and remembered online, and you just proved it right there. People do remember how they find you, which is why first impressions is so important in business and life in general. So, you know, there are other areas such as, you know, that's obviously the podcasting side of things. Let's take, and I'm a big You know, I'm a big fan of blogging. I think being active online as a blogger has done amazing things for me as an entrepreneur and as a business owner in general. What has, you know, you mentioned that you got a little bit of a sort of a dull ache, so to speak, for blogging after a while, and then you started looking at these other areas. I know how much time you spend on some of your blog posts. It's still kind of almost a stable diet for Pat, am I right?
Yeah.
Okay. So what are your overall views on blogging in general? And why do you feel it's so important for business owners to start blogging nowadays?
I mean, blogging is just, I mean, there's a whole range of reasons why blogging or just writing articles on your website should be done. But I like to say blogging because it kind of frames it around a community. You know, where people can respond and leave their opinion and the, you know, the, I always say that a blog post doesn't end at the end of the post. It ends at the end of the comments because you get a lot of great information from other people in the comments and you start to learn about your audience. And that's probably the biggest thing, especially for offline business owners. It's a great way to get online and to learn exactly who is your target audience and what their feelings are. Because you could guess, you know, but until you hear them out and actually see what they're typing or hear their opinions on voicemails or customer service lines or anything, you're not going to know exactly what is going through their heads. You need to hear from them directly. And blogging is a really easy way for people to just come in, read something you have to say, or maybe it's something new that came out in your business and you can get an immediate reaction.
Right.
Oh my gosh, I can't wait to get this. I have to get my hands on it. Or what, you know, maybe they're going to ask questions that you wouldn't even have thought of before. And that's golden information. The more information you can find about your target audience, the better. And so blogging is a great way, yes, to you know, rise in the search engines and get higher rankings. It's a great way to show authority in your particular niche, to show people in your space or your target audience that you know something that potentially someone else who also is in your space doesn't know. You know, but really, honestly, for me, I think the best thing about it is being able to interact with your audience and see exactly where they're coming from and what sort of, you know, you can use different sort of blog posts to test the waters, you know, to see if something might resonate with them. And you might find that what you thought would resonate with them actually makes them upset, or maybe it's something that doesn't, and something that you didn't think would resonate with them or would make them excited is something that you should totally focus more of your time and energy on. So you can really, again, learn a lot about your audience through blogging. So that's why whenever people say, oh, I don't want to leave comments on, I'm like, dude, you're missing the whole point of creating a blog then. You might as well just, you know, throw up a PDF and not worry or care about who your audience is.
Right, right, exactly. And I think, you know, that there's different types of blogging. You know, there's a blogging where you have the website and stuff like that, but I know a lot of people that are very successful now with news, kind of like email blogs or newsletter blogs, where they'll just have like a 5-page website that they drive traffic to, they get their people to opt in, and they'll send them, you know, like a 1,000-word email once a week instead of actually writing and publishing a blog post. It's all offline. It's in that kind of more exclusive newsletter / email kind of group kind of thing. It doesn't really matter because ultimately it all adds up to the same thing. And like you say, it's about helping people, solving problems, inspiring, motivating, communicating, whatever the case may be, right?
Right, exactly. And no, whether it's a blog post or an email or report they get, or even a physical newsletter they get in the mail.
Right.
I mean, every sort of interaction that your customers have with you, where they're reading something that you have to provide, is a little transaction that can just turn into something huge. They can turn into big time customers. It could be something that can get them to just build an even stronger relationship with you. It can be something that can get them to share you and what you have to offer to whoever they know.
Oh, yeah. No, absolutely. So, all right. So we've covered podcasting. We've covered blogging. What's next? What do you want to talk about next? Video? Let's talk about video.
Okay. So I talked about podcasts. 19% of people found my blog through my podcast and are now reading my blog. 18%, 1% less, YouTube, specifically YouTube.
Now, your videos are, and I'm going to flatter you a little bit here, but you're right. Your first few videos were just like everybody else's first few videos. They're kind of a little raw, a little sketchy, you know, quality
most people's first videos are like that.
Yeah, exactly.
Probably a lot better than mine.
Now, I remember, I think the first ever video I saw of yours was when, I think you were walking down a road with Gizmo, right? I think you were, Gizmo is Pat's dog, who humped the crap out of me.
He's still dead. He's like the perfect dog in every single way. Doesn't bark. He's so friendly.
Right.
But whenever someone comes over the house, he will hump you like he has.
Like it's his job.
I don't know. There's a joke in there somewhere, but I'm not even going to go try for it. But yeah, he will clasp his like his claws around you, and you will feel movement. That's what it's like.
You'll feel movement. That's you heard it. Yes, that's exactly what happened when I visited Pat in San Diego.
So I apologize about that and for anyone else.
I felt movement. Yeah, we knew that this was going to be a little silly at some point. I think that's it. I think that was a silly point, right? So we'll move on now. Online video. So, yes, I think I remember the first video I saw you. You were showing around your little cubby hole, which was your home office in the apartment before you guys moved in the house and everything. And then out of nowhere, your videos get better and better and better. You do the whiteboard thing. You do, you know, just now your videos are insane. Like, and this is what you do. Let's make it clear. This is what you do for a living, right? So not everybody listening in on this will have hours and hours and hours and hours and hours to devote to putting together like a 6-part tutorial via video on how to start a podcast, which you recently did. I'll link to it in the show notes, everyone. This is all you need to do. Like I was honestly thinking about doing something similar, but there was absolutely no reason for me to do so because Pat did such a great job at putting this tutorial together that I'm just going to link to it. I'm not going to bother wasting my time, plain simple. So
Michael Hyatt, you know Michael Hyatt.
Yeah.
He sent out a tweet that said, he said, I'm so glad Pat Flynn made this podcasting tutorial so I don't have to.
Yeah, right. And Michael Hyatt, for those not listening in, is like he's got a great podcast, great blog, great book.
He owns a publishing business. Yeah. He's got a book named Platform and 150,000 subscribers. So, yeah. I mean, I was very honored to get that tweet from him.
Right, and, right. So, so the videos have got better and better with quality. What do you think makes up a good online video in today's kind of
great question?
Very kind of what's the word? It's
economy.
Not economy. I was going to say everybody's moving so damn fast. Nobody, you know, people's attention spans are getting shorter and shorter and shorter. What makes a good video? What makes people stay connected to you via video in today's world? Do you think?
That's a great question, and that's in deep contrast with a podcast, which could be a little bit longer, such as this show, because people are listening to this when they're on a walk, at the gym, in their car, or wherever. You know, they have time. When people are watching a video, that means they have to be glued to the computer screen or their mobile phone or iPad Mini or whatever, Samsung Galaxy Note Surface or whatever.
Right, yeah. God,
there's so many of them now.
Look, let's just say real quick, iPad Mini was dreaming about it for years, cannot wait to get my hands on one.
I've heard so many good things about it.
Oh,
even though it's just a smaller iPad, like that's all it is.
Right.
Everyone's like, dude, this is perfect size.
Yeah. Anyway, let's not geek out too much. Go back to what makes a good video.
In contrast, a video needs to be shorter because people's attention spans are a lot less.
Right.
They're not going to be focused the whole time. And you want to keep them engaged when they are focused. So I would say, you know, it depends on what the content is. And sometimes things are going to be, you know, need to be a little longer. But I would say under 10 minutes is max. Under 5 minutes is even better. And again, it depends on your style and what you have to teach. But, you know, even the quick short videos are really good. You know, even under a minute, if you can do it and nail a tip or something, depending on what niche you're in. But, you know, when you think about these viral videos that go online and, you know, of cats or, you know, like old people dancing Gundam style or whatever. It's like they're all 36 seconds long and they get shared millions of times because people feel like they have enough time to watch something for 36 seconds.
Correct.
And so that's the first thing. Keep it short. Just don't. I would say maybe the best thing to say is just don't waste people's time with it. Just cut to the chase. and deliver high quality information that's going to help them do something or is achieving something with purpose.
Yeah.
Don't just blabble out there. Yeah. Now, another thing is, and I've gotten slack about this before, actually. I did a, I think it was like a 12-minute video of me with Corbett Barr from ThinkTraffic.net, who is, I know, a good friend of both of ours. And it was just a talking head video. It was his face when he spoke and my face when I spoke. And a couple people, I mean, more than a couple people emailed me saying, you know, that was a great video. It was great content. But there was like, it was just your faces. Like, I felt like kind of violated by just having you stare at me the whole time. You know, like talking right. heads are great because you can see the people's face, but it's good to a certain point. You know, after a certain amount of time, it becomes pointless. You know, there's like no reason for people to have to look at you that long, right?
Right,
you know, unless you're like Channing Tatum or something, then you want people looking at you the whole time. But
right.
But the idea is to show your face. I think this is the perfect video. You know, show your face, introduce who you are, talk about what you're going to talk about first, and then get right into it. And right at that point, you're going to switch to whatever it is that you want to talk about. You know, mm-hmm. whether it's you know, B-roll camera, which is just, you know, shots of whatever, even if it's not exactly related to what you're talking about, something to look at so they can be engaged and follow along.
Right.
Something different, something pops up on the screen or a chart comes up. I mean, that's why my whiteboard videos, which is actually, for those of you who don't know, it's a recording of me. It's a computer recording of me writing on Photoshop with a little pen tool on a whiteboard. And it just has my logo in the corner. And I talk while I write. And it reminds people, they say, who have watched those videos, of being in class. And, you know, if you are imagining yourself in a classroom and the professor just stands up in the front of the room and just speaks the whole time, no slides or anything, that's what a talking face video is like. Super boring, unless they're like some incredibly well-known famous guy who you just, you know, whatever. But it's the ones with slides, it's the ones with interesting images, the ones that have actually movement all across the screen are the ones that, you know, right. you pay attention to in class.
Right, right.
And so that's what you kind of want to do with your own videos too. And, you know, most of my most popular videos are the ones that teach people how to do something when it's not myself talking. It's going through a tool using screen recording software like Camtasia or ScreenFlow, mm-hmm. And just walking people through step by step how to do things. And actually, all of my videos or most of my videos are all answers to people's questions. So I think that's a great strategy. If there's one thing to take away when it comes to video, answer people's questions using video. Use your talking head a little bit. Just do a little bit of editing, then talk about whatever it is that they have a question about and answer it. And then what you're going to do, you send that answer to them. They're going to be super stoked that you actually put time and effort to create a video for them. Well, little do they know it's actually for them and for everyone else who has the exact same question, which is going to save you time in the future. It's going to impress everyone who has the same question in the future that you can just forward that video to. And it's going to be searched for in Google, and it's going to be found in YouTube. And that's, you know, my most popular video is an answer to someone's question, which is how do I create a Facebook landing page or a Facebook business page or a landing page on a Facebook business page. And, you know, I actually had to create three videos because Facebook keeps changing stuff. But combined, right. it's almost 750,000 views for that one question.
Yeah, it's the time-honored legacy of just solving a problem for someone. And I recently got asked that question as well. What sort of stuff should I put in my online videos? And I shot a video and put a post up about it in regards to the different types of things, such as, you know, you've got the talking head and the location shots, the interviews, on stage stuff, behind the scenes stuff. People love behind the scenes, unboxing, you know, all these different types of stuff. Like you say, instead of just the talking head stuff all the time, it does get a little boring, a little monotonous to sort of try and do something different, but always with the focus of solving a problem. I think, you know, at that point, that video is going to be shared relatively freely and without any major issues. But one thing I want to point out that Pat mentioned a little while back is in regards to the length of the videos. I have experimented quite heavily with this myself, and I have found the sweet spot for videos to be around the 3 to 4 minute mark. If you really want them to be shared out properly and consumed properly and commented on and things like that, it's that 3 to 4 minute mark. And we're all guilty of doing longer videos as well as very short ones as well. But that's the sweet spot, just so everybody knows. I mean, according to me anyway, for
that makes sense when you think about it. It's like if someone sees a video, it's 5 minutes. Or 5 minutes, you know, that's maybe if 5 minutes
of my life here I'm talking about, right?
Yeah, but I mean, there's such a huge difference between 3 or 4 minutes and 5 minutes, because we always think of things in 5 minute increments. So under 5 minutes is just going to be like, okay, well, I have that time.
Right.
Especially if it's something that's useful. And if it is useful, you can be sure it's going to help you out in more ways than just helping that one person. They're going to share it. You know, videos are shared like crazy on Facebook and Twitter nowadays. And you're just going to build that relationship with them really fast. I mean, in under 5 minutes.
Absolutely. All right. So look, you bring up Facebook. Let's go. I mean, there's so much about social media out there. Let's touch on this. We've had some great guests before in the past on the show. Amy Porterfield, Lewis Howes, you know, they've covered the social media stuff really, really well themselves. But I want to know what Pat's philosophy to social media is. And I want to talk a little bit about your Facebook group, because it is probably one of the most engaged communities out there online in regards to being away from a blog. So you truly do practice what you preach. You are everywhere here. That Facebook group I've seen grown. I think the first time I discovered it, it had like, I don't know, whatever it was, 3,000 or 4,000 likes on or fans or whatever it was back in them days. It's now coming up to 30,000 odd, right? So, I mean, what have you done to develop that community into the monster that it's become?
Well, Facebook and any social media actually that I engage with is used as a tool, not for selling, but for extending and building upon the relationship that I've created with someone on my blog. So it's an extension of my blog, a way for people to see who I am sort of behind the scenes, I guess you could say. And that stuff's really important because, you know, a blog is great. You can write content, but people really get to know you when you have one-on-one conversations with them. And the best way to do that is with either a one-on-one conversation or a one-on-many conversation on a platform which is social, like Facebook or Twitter, or even LinkedIn and things like that. And so, you know, again, it's just having the ability to interact with people in a way that you can't do on your blog. You can't do on a podcast. I mean, people can't ask us questions right now. They can ask us questions later in a blog post, or, you know, when you go to Facebook to post this, then people can engage. But, you know, and just the whole viral quality of social media these days is just ridiculous. You know, when somebody shares something and their followers see it, and so they, you know, they share it and everything. So again, it's just an extension of my blog, and it really is what people use to get to know me. I mean, that's really important. I want people to know me. I want people to feel like they're my friend, and they can only do that so much reading my content or watching my videos. But it's when they hear about me talking about how excited I am that my son's out of diapers now on Facebook or Twitter, where people who have kids can totally relate to that, you know, that's going to be a little seed that I plant in their head. I mean, I don't want to make it seem like I'm being manipulative, but I mean, that's exactly what happens when we tell stories with people. We remember certain things that people say in stories that we can relate to. Oh, you like to go golfing too? Me too. Oh, you hit a hole in one? That is so awesome. I'm always going to remember that, you know?
Right.
And that might not have to do anything with the business that you're in or the particular products that you create, but it has everything to do with building a relationship and having people remember who you are and having people remember to come to you, even if it's not the most economical decision at that time. They're going to come to you because they know you, and knowing someone is so important when it comes to making decisions, because you just feel more secure and you feel like you have someone to contact when something goes wrong. And so, you know, Gary Vaynerchuk calls this small town rules, because back in the day when there were small towns, you know, rural, that's such a hard word to say. Rural.
Yeah, what is that? Why don't they change that word? I think you mean rural, right?
Rural,
right? It's ridiculous. It's one of the most.
I sound like Scooby-Doo right now.
Yeah. But no, you're right, though. I understand where you're coming from. And I mean, yeah, Vaynerchuk is one of those guys that talks about how important it was back in them days to build up the relationships. And I, you know, I've said this on a couple of occasions where I think that we are at the point of going back to that era now. I think people want to do business with people now more so than they do brands, that they're more likely, and I've used this analogy a lot, they're more likely to go back and spend a little more buying their bread from Bob the Baker three blocks away than they are to purchase that you know, loaf of bread two more blocks down the road at a slightly cheaper price, because they know Bob. They know Bob's family.
Exactly.
You know, that's kind of thing.
You know, funny quick story about that. My first business was at greenexamacademy.com. It's a site I built to help people pass this exam. It's a really niched exam in the architecture industry. And I had pretty much one of the only guides for that test for a while. And then all of a sudden, the United States Green Building Council, the people who administer this exam, came out with their own study guides. And I was like, I am screwed. Like, who would buy from Pat Flynn, just a random guy who has passed a test and created an exam, versus the USGBC who administers the exam? But actually, my sales were not affected at all. I was getting more, I was getting emails from people saying, I'm buying from you because I feel like I know you, or because I know you're, you know, all the emails would say, hey, Pat, whatever. It wouldn't say, hey, Green Exam Academy. But when you try to buy something from the USGBC, or, you know, it's always the USGBC. It's not Phil or Bob or whoever. They felt more comfortable buying from me. And also, you know, I had less overhead. So I could compete price-wise too. But, you know, just the fact that people were saying, hey, Pat, thank you, or hey, Pat this, hey, Pat that. Like, they knew me because I put myself on that site, just like how I put myself on Smart Passive Income.
Oh, yeah, for real. So, yeah, I completely agree. People, it's a P2P economy now. It's not B2B or B2C anymore. And I've said that a ton of times. So,
and that's what social media can do. It can help you become a real person again, even though you have a business and you can connect with people.
Right, exactly. And I think that as business owners, our personal brand is just as important, if not more important, than our brand, because people, I believe, like I said, people are going to buy me before they buy one of my services or one of my products. That's, I truly believe that. And I know that you're kind of from the same school of thought, right?
Yeah. Oh, no, absolutely. I mean, that's why there's obviously a line that you can cross of what, how much you can share about yourself. And, you know, you want to make sure you're comfortable with what you're doing. But I think, you know, a lot of people back in the day were like, I'm going to start a business and I'm going to make it the coolest business name, coolest domain name. I'm not going to put my name in it. I'm going to say, we here at such and such business, you know, it's we this, or our services will do this. You know,
right.
It's not like that anymore. It's, hey, what's up? My name's Leo. I run Buffer App. Come check me out. You know, like, you get to know these people, even like big time startups, you know, that, you know, Mark Zuckerberg and all these other people who, you know, you get to know who the CEOs are. And I think they know how important it is to be a face to their brand.
Yeah, no, I agree. All right. So a couple more points I want to touch on real quick before we wrap this. Be everywhere on stage. Okay, you said you've done a handful of speaking gigs already. You got another load coming up. What do you think? Do you think the onstage side of things, with the events that you've spoken at, do you think that that has helped get more people to your online brand? Or do you think that the large majority of people who would be sitting in that audience at whatever event will know you already because of your online brand? How do you see that balanced up? I'm curious to know. Because you have such a big following online already. What's your take on it?
Yeah, I mean, that's a really great question. And, you know, I think it's kind of 50-50. You know, I know a lot of people who are in the audience of where I speak, you know, New Media Expo or these other places I'm going to speak at. They're people who have heard of me already, but a lot of people wouldn't have heard of me already either. And whenever I go present, I want to make sure I bring new information for everybody. And so, you know, it'll deepen that relationship that I already have with people. And then it'll also impress people who have never found me before. And the thing is, you know, these presentations, you know, yeah, they just happen one time, but I always do my best to try and record them or talk about them in some way afterwards. And so that everybody who's on my blog or who eventually finds my blog can come back to that later. And I think the whole, you know, not everyone presents on stage. And I think there's a certain sort of authority level that goes along with that. Like, oh, this guy's serious about what he's talking about. He's on stage, that's why people do speaking events. Some people do it just for the authoritative nature of it because they're going to come out with books later and they want to, or maybe they've come out with a book already and they know that they're going to, because they're on stage and people listen to people in authority, situations that they're going to make more sales that way. Yeah. But yeah, I mean, I love the public speaking. It's brings me back to my marching band days when I used to perform with them, where I really do get the same feeling where I prepare, just like I memorize music or marching steps or whatever. And then when I'm presenting, it's just like I'm performing on the field. I know my stuff so well that I sort of just phase out and I don't even know. It's like an out of body experience. And all of a sudden it's over and I get, people are clapping and then I'm like back into my body. I'm like, whoa, right. What just happened? And it's right. So fun. I mean, I'm having such a blast. I don't know why I feared this so much. But again, it was the podcast that sort of was a nice stepping stone to this. And I know this is going to help my business even more, even if it's people who have found me already who are watching me present. It's like I said, it's going to deepen my relationship with them. But also it's just giving me more things to put in my resume if I were to ever want to speak at a higher level thing.
Sure.
Or if I wanted to get picked up by a publisher or something. If two people are exactly the same and one has been on a speaking circuit, I mean, which one are they going to pick?
Oh, yeah. No, absolutely. And you talk about, knowing your slides and knowing your presentation so well that anything can happen. And you know what I'm going to bring up now, right?
I know where you're going with this.
Because this is such a cool story. And I think this was maybe like your second or your third speaking gig or whatever. And I'm sure
Didn't we say we were going to not tell anybody about this?
About what?
Whatever. Just go.
No. We're gonna tell them about it. This was where we had spent a bit of time going through your slides, and you just wanted my opinion from one speaker to another a day or two before the event. The event rolls around, okay, and what happened was, and this is why I'm saying, is there some sort of a secret that I don't know about here, Pat? Because everyone in the room saw your slides collapse.
Oh, that. Okay. No, right. I thought you were talking about something else.
Oh.
I thought you were talking about the night before.
Right.
Yes, folks, night before.
Oh, yeah. The night before, me and Pat. No, but what happened was, and we'd gone through the slides a little bit, and, we'd run through them a couple of times, and then the day comes along, he's on stage, he's about, I don't know, a minute or so into his presentation, and it was incredible. For everybody listening in, you have got to go and try and find video footage of this somewhere. I'm sure you've got it somewhere on your site, Pat.
Someone made an animated GIF of it.
Right, so but that's just a double take. But that's just a double take of you understanding what was going on. What I'm talking about here was that Pat had slides that were forwarded with a clicker in his hand. And he was so bang on. He knew his material so well, way better than I ever knew my material for sure, that he could literally forward these slides without even looking at the screen. That was how rehearsed he was. That was how good he was. Yet the slides let him down because it was a slightly different font or something like that, right? It wasn't installed on the computer. Is that what it was?
I used a custom font that I found online for my keynote presentation, and apparently they couldn't let me use my computer because they had their recording equipment hooked up to theirs. So I just put it in a USB card, put it on their computer, and I thought everything was fine. But apparently when I got to slides with any sort of text on it, it defaulted to the much wider Arial font.
That's right.
And so you would only see a couple letters of each word.
Right. And you didn't know. Everyone else in the auditorium that day could see it happening, and when you finally realized what was happening, there was this amazing double take when you kind of glanced at the screen and then looked away and then instantly looked back at it and sort of just threw your hands up in the air, right? but that just goes, and this was the thing, everyone, this is something you've got to understand about being prepared. It didn't faze Pat at all. He continued through the entire 45-minute presentation. Maybe for the first 5 minutes afterwards, there was a couple of slides where it was all screwed up and people would kind of giggle and Pat would giggle along with them, which was kind of funny. And I think actually worked for you in the end because, you know, it just got to the point where everybody knew how prepared you really were. So
well, it's
just
funny, like, people came up to me afterwards and was like, that was, did you do that on purpose? And I was like, hell no, I didn't do that on purpose. Are you kidding me? I would never do that on purpose.
Right,
wouldn't do that to myself. But everyone's like, you rocked it. It just showed that you knew your material. And I was like, I can't use this trick anymore.
No. So there's your little anecdote right there, everyone. Get over and have a look at the animated gift. I think it was Cliff, right? Cliff Ravenscraft put that together?
It's hilarious. I, you know, just kind of repeats over and over. And it's that moment of realization.
Sheer shock and disbelief on your face, right?
yeah. But was it that same presentation? The one that where the night before you caught me. This is going to sound really bad. You caught me in my bedroom.
Dude, don't go there.
Okay, I'll just leave it. No, we can't leave it now.
No.
So I was rehearsing my presentation. And
oh, this
in my
was
hotel.
What you wanted me to keep a secret. Is this?
Yeah, but
this
I don't care anymore.
Okay, all right, screw it. It's a new business podcast, baby. Let it go. Go, do it.
Yeah, this is how you do. Okay, anyways. So I was preparing my presentation, and one thing I learned when in band, there's my band reference again, was to, when you're rehearsing, to always try and put yourself in the situation like it's going to be when you perform. So I did the same thing with my speaking gig. I actually suited up. I got into my little my three-piece suit and started presenting in my hotel room. And Chris came over and knocked on the door because we were staying in the same hotel. And I was like, oh, crap, Chris is here. Do I change out? And like, because this is embarrassing. But I just opened it and he was like, dude, what are you doing? You're in your suit and it's like 2 a.m.
Right.
But it worked out. I was prepared.
But you presented like 15-20 minutes of that presentation to me right there in your suit in your hotel room at 2 o'clock in the morning, and it was identical to what it was the day after, with all the slides all screwed up. So it just goes to show you the moral of the story, children. Know your shit before you get up on stage and present it, because anything can happen. Technology can go against you. All right, the last thing I want to touch base on. This has been a really great chat, and it's definitely longer than some of our other conversations. But I feel that, you know, when you have so much to share, you shouldn't pull back on it. Books. This is another platform. You haven't quite touched this quite yet, but you're getting very close to it. Let's very quickly, we've talked at length about the whole kind of traditional self-publishing stuff. Let's leave that to one side. You're currently working on your first Kindle book, right?
Right.
And it is on the subject that we are talking about right now. So here's your little plug. Tell us a little bit about that. How far along are you? Because I know as a first-time author, myself included, I'm currently working on the book, and it's like, oh my God, I got to write 1,000 words today. You know, this is tough. How are you getting on with it, man?
It's very different than anything I have done before. You know, I can crank out, you know, a lot of my blog posts are fairly long. I can crank out a 2,500 to 4,000 word blog post in just 4 or 5 hours. Easy, really easy, in-depth, everything. For a while there, I was struggling to get 100 words in this book. You know, I second guess every single word, every single sentence. It just seems so much more permanent, I guess. And even though it was a Kindle book, you know, I can just re-upload a new version. It's not like it's going to get printed.
Right.
I just still, it's difficult, but I've learned to just let things go. I'm going to create a really crappy first draft and then edit it from there. I think it was, who was it? Hemingway, I think, said, write drunk, edit sober. I think it was
okay.
Because then, you know, what happens is when you're drunk, you know, you let everything loose and you just get more creative and things come out that you wouldn't have thought of if you were trying to kind of nitpick your way and be an editor along the way.
Right.
So,
right.
So I'm taking that approach now. And the thing was, I'm about halfway through. I'm about 25,000 words through. I want to aim for about 40,000.
So this is so for all intents and purposes, then this is a big Kindle book, because I mean, most published, traditionally published books around the 50 to 60,000 mark word, right? So
right.
Nonfiction anyway. So this is going to be a relatively sizable Kindle book, because a lot of Kindle books are quite short. I think I did my definitive guide to outsourcing to the Philippines ended up being, I think, a, oh God, how, what was it? I think it was Let me get this right. I think it was around 25,000 words, something like that. And when I looked at it, I was like, damn, this is a lot. This is a lot. But you're talking about doing something almost double that, and it's still just a Kindle book.
Yeah, I mean, I have the outline. I'm writing it in Scrivener, which is a great writing tool, and I have it outlined, and I'm halfway through the outline, and I have about 22,000 words. And so that's how I know it's going to be about double, although I may come in later and take a lot of pieces out because I might read through it and be like, okay, whoa, this is too long. I already talked about this.
Right.
You know, we'll see what happens. But, you know, the point of the Kindle book is, you know, not only just it's an interesting platform, but, you know, it's another way to be everywhere. And, you know, when I say be everywhere, it's be everywhere where people are, you know, like right. I said, you're not throwing your message in the ocean. You're putting it right where people are, where traffic is already, like iTunes. iTunes is a search engine. Tons of people looking for podcasts already. YouTube is the second biggest search engine in the world. People are always sharing stuff. And Amazon, there's 300 million people with registered credit cards on Amazon. That's huge.
Yeah.
You know, potential. There are people there already. So the point is just get your message up on there, and that's what this that's what Be Everywhere is about. And this is another platform to go to.
Yeah.
So it's been a fun experience, and what happened was after I got halfway through, I actually had 2 more weeks planned out to finish it, but then my daughter was born 2 weeks early, so I had to kind of set my priorities where they should be.
Oh, yeah,
and I've
course.
Been focusing on family for a while and putting the book aside, although it's still there. I'm still working on it, and you know, I'll be honest with you, with 2 kids in the house, it's hard to even find an hour or two of time to really get deep into the writing process.
Yeah, yeah. Well, I found sometimes when I've wanted to work on stuff, you know, business proposals, even the book now, I feel like I'm a little bit better when I'm out of the house. You might want to try this. Grab the laptop and just go to a Starbucks or a park or, you know, whatever, and just kind of bunker yourself into something for an hour or two. In fact, actually, when I was putting together the book proposal for my agent, I actually bunkered myself into a hotel for 2 nights.
Yeah, I remember that. Yeah,
you know, Urs and the little one would come and visit me for a couple hours during the day, and then they would leave, and they'd leave me to my own devices. And it was the weirdest thing. And you talk about out of body experiences and all that sort of stuff being on stage. This was strange because it was like, I would get up, I'd work for a couple of hours, and then I'd go out and have a bite to eat, and I'd come back, maybe hit the gym, then go for a swim, then get back to writing, then take a nap. And it was weird because 1 minute I was writing at, like, you know, 5 p.m., the next minute I'd go to sleep for like 4 hours, and then I'd wake up, and then I'd be writing until like 3 a.m. It was the weirdest situation. There was no real fixed time for me. It was whenever I felt like writing. And bear in mind, I wasn't writing the book. I was just putting the damn proposal together for it. So yeah, it was the weirdest thing, but it became quite apparent to me after that weekend that it's very hard to have like a set time where you say, right, Saturday morning between 8 and 11, I'm writing my book. It's not like that. It's not like that, because come Saturday at 8, you might not be in the right mindset or the right frame of mind to sit down and actually creatively write. So it's a tough journey.
You gotta
to
figure
take.
It out, and you know, you just gotta do it, you know, and do anything you can and figure out ways to get things done.
Yeah, that's, and we're all separate, right? We're all different when it comes to that sort of stuff anyway.
Right.
So, all right, man, look, it's been good to chat with you. I'm going to ask you one last question. This is, and you kind of already answered it. In fact, we answered it with the title of this podcast anyway. But I wrap up every podcast with the same question to my guest. And that is, what's your number one tip to doing business in today's economy? I got a rough idea. I'm going to know what you're going to say, but go ahead.
Well, I'm going to quote something for this tip.
Well, this is really philosophical. This is great.
This is a quote by Sidney Lanier, who is an American author. The quote is, "If you want to be found, stand where the seekers seek."
Mm-hmm. There you go.
Think about that.
Yeah. You're very philosophical. This is great. It's a new side of Pat Flynn. I've never seen this side of Pat before.
1 a.m. So I think we're at that philosophical time of the day.
It is. You're right. All right, brother. Well, look, it's been good catching up. Good luck with everything. And for the rest of everyone out there, I guess they just got to head their asses up over to Smart Passive Income, right?
Yeah, or just, you know, your website browser.
Right. It could do that.
Or your asses, too. I mean, whatever.
Or your asses, too. Whatever works. Yeah. Whatever allows you to discover Pat and what he's all about, smartpassiveincome.com is the place to go and find out more about what he's doing. Follow all his projects, Facebook group, links to everything that we've discussed, literally everything that we've discussed in the show notes over at chrisducker.com. Thank you very much, everybody, for tuning in. And Pat, thank you one more time for being such a cool guest.
Thank you for having me, Chris.
Alrighty. We'll see you next time, everybody, on the new business podcast. Until then, stay sexy. If you want to catapult the growth of your business in today's economy, you need to join my free 7-day new business bootcamp for actionable tips on blogging, online video, outsourcing, podcasting, social media, and much, much more. Just visit chrisducker.com for more details and instant access. I'll see you on the inside.